I think you and May, well, you have the same problem.
I can't help it.
Pride, it's not your fault.
It is. I should have been able to resist, but I couldn't. I was weak.
No. Ram did evil things to you. To your mind. You can't blame yourself. You understand?
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 42 of Conversation Eagle Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
We have episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 42, the screenplay was done by Charles Hodges. It was directed by Costa Boats. An episode synopsis read out by Liz.
Ved attempts to get through to Ram in reality space, while Ebony and Jay prepare to make their move. Pride and May admit their problem, but struggle to keep away from the game.
So, Pride is ashamed of his addiction to the game, but Celine tells him it's not his fault. Later, she calls a meeting where Pride and May both tell the others about their problem and apologize, asking for the removal of the headsets to help them avoid the game. So yeah, how do you feel about everyone's secret being out and the Morax' reaction?
There was a reaction from the Morax?
I mean, no, but...
So there's this film called Wallace and Gromit. No, it's called Shaun the Sheep. Okay, it's the Shaun the Sheep movie. And when they go to the dog home... Right, there's this dog that keeps staring at Sean, okay, and we later find out that's just a photograph of a dog, and behind it the dog has made a tunnel and escaped, like in the Shawshank Redemption, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what this was giving. We might as well have got a photograph of the mole rats and then just had May and Pride and Celine looking at them, because they were giving absolutely nothing.
I mean, Celine isn't really in any place to judge. Neither is Lex. They know what addiction is.
I mean, now they've got to be a completely dry house because of Pride. And, you know, Lex, I know that his characterization is wildly inconsistent. So for him not to even say anything just feels like, yet again, these aren't characters, they're just props.
Yeah, I feel this moment when they have to come clean and apologize to everybody and admit, you know, Pride has to admit he has a problem. It just lacks any resonance because of how his story has been told. And this is what I always had a problem with. They were never very clear as to why Pride was addicted, but like Sammy and Mouse weren't. We had to speculate as to why. And that's what we did, because the story didn't make it clear that his addiction came from whatever Ram did in that chair. It's told in the afterthought. In fact, it's actually mentioned in this episode, but it was never explained before that this is why Pride is so hard up for the game. It was never clarified that if you are hooked up a certain way, you'll be addicted to the game, because the information, the visual storytelling and everything just wasn't consistent, because Amber was also hooked up to the game. And she showed no addiction to this. She never wanted to go back. So it's like, okay, you can't say that someone who is hooked up like Amber or May will automatically be addicted, because clearly one is addicted and one isn't. You can't say it has to do with length of time, because Pride wasn't in there very long, but May was in there for very long. You know what I mean? You can't say it's just from consistent playing, because while some of the city kids are losing their minds, you've got Mouse and Sammy who are still acting like normal human beings. It hasn't made sense how the addiction to the game works, so this doesn't land. And the narrative being like, well, it's not their fault they're addicted. It makes your metaphor for addiction fall flat. Because again, it's all over the board with the storytelling up until this point. So what could have been poignant, you know, Celine holding her man and him breaking down about his, you know, this addiction and feeling weak of character because he became addicted, it doesn't work. Who freaking cares? Pride can't blame the addiction for being a dick because he's been a dick since the season started, you know? So it's just like they want it to mean so much, but it doesn't mean anything to me.
At one end, they make it seem like, oh, this is because they were hooked up. But then later on, we have Ed commenting about, oh, that's why the game was made so addictive, which makes it seem like this is going to happen to everyone in the city.
And I think, as you said, Liz, with the poor writing around Pride, the way that he's come in, essentially being a sort of, he'll shriek in your face at the slightest opposition or if something's not going his way. And that's been the way it's been since the opening episodes, really. And so you don't feel the change. It's not like we've seen the Pride of old and he's slowly spiraled into this addiction and we've seen him snap at people and be nasty and it feels like there's something going wrong here, what's going on, and then it's revealed to the audience that he's deep into the game, he's lying, he's playing it all the time, he's addicted. So yeah, you're right, it doesn't land. And like you say, Sabine, we're told multiply different things about the addiction level of the game, and none of it makes any sense. It seems to serve the plot when it's required.
I don't think it's weird to remove the headsets in the mall. You know, I mean, yeah, it's just, that's a pretty common thing when someone's addicted to something. Like if you have someone who's an alcoholic, you have a dry house. It stinks for the others who can drink responsibly, but it's just the way it works, you know? And again, we already know that they didn't want the headsets in the mall in the first place, but it was like, how can we keep everyone off of it? So Celine just washed her hands of it. I'm not blaming her for that. I'm just saying, like, they gave up on the idea of having no exposure to any of this. So the fact that it's like, okay, now that we know we have two addicts in the house, we can't have headsets here. You know, it's a bit rich for Pride to be the one to suggest it. But it still is a logical decision to make. I think it would have been better if someone else suggested it, but I suppose this is Pride trying to show that he really does want to get away from the game, even though he's going to turn heel when, you know, before the episode's over. The narrative really wants us to feel bad for Pride, and I just don't, because again, they didn't tell his story very well for me to believe that the addiction is the reason that I can't stand him. You just made him an unlikable character from the start of the season. So the addiction has nothing to do with it. I don't feel any empathy for him and what he's going through, which I know I'm supposed to, but I don't. And it's just too late to make me care. It's no wonder the Mallrats have such a non-reaction to the whole thing. They're just like, whatever. I bet some of them are like, yeah, duh. You know, like, of course. It's like, nobody cares. And it's like, so why should we? The only one this matters to is Celine. Yeah, she's the only one who's affected.
I would say, though, we have seen that in the past, though. We have seen conversations, group conversations with Mallrats, where they actually display that. Like rolling the eyes, like who cares, shrugging, that sort of thing. Like they're giving us nothing at all. They just sit there, and they've been sitting there in these big group discussions for ages.
Yeah, let's face it, without the main people from Mallrats, they're no longer a tribe who cares about each other.
But it's not even that necessarily. It's that we used to have nice, dingy, snappy lines of dialogue in the big group scenes. There are some great memorable group scenes where even characters that maybe didn't have as much input, like Casey, Dal, Patsy, Chloe, still got a line that told you about their character, told you about how they felt about something. And in this whole scene really rests on Mouse, Celine, Pride and May. Everybody else is just like
filler.
Off. Yeah.
If I define positive I will say this. That scene where Pride may have to tell everybody and apologize. What I do like are the subtle differences in how Pride and May respond to being outed and everybody knowing this about them. I do think this is the one thing that might constitute as decent characterization. I know it hurts to say it, but it gotta give it credit where it's due. Pride really cares how he is seen by other people. Even though he acts like a douche, he doesn't want people to think that he is one. And so he is devastated that everybody knows this about him. Everybody knows he's been a hypocrite this whole time and that he's been sneaking around doing this. And he's ashamed about this addiction. I like the fact that May doesn't seem to care what everyone says. She's apologizing because, you know, it's the easement of dealing with the group, but she doesn't feel any shame. She doesn't care about these people. And I don't blame her. Why should she? It's not like any of them tried to find her. You know, if anything, you'll see later in the episode, she's more disgusted by the hypocrisy of the group just in general and in Pride. Everybody pretending, you know, and I did think that was decent characterization based on who they are as people. You know, May has always been a more honest person than Pride could ever be anyway. And so the fact that if you look at their apologies and their behavior, it's so clear that Pride cares what people think and he can't live up to the person he wants people to think he is. But May is just like, yeah, whatever. I'll say I'm sorry to play nice with everybody, but I'm not ashamed. I'm not really sorry. You know what I mean? Like, whatever.
She's just saying this to prevent being molested and fettered again.
Yeah, she's just like, what? It's the one moment where a character feels like they have a past with the mall rats, because you could argue that Laura's performance is based on what she knows May has gone through with these people before, and their hypocrisy, and the feeling of never really being a part of the group, and what she went through with the Chosen, on and on. You know, the energy she had with the Chosen, where she really still wanted to be a part of the group and wanted everyone to, let's get this together, and what would be easier for all of us is to play along. May was still really trying hard to be a part of this family. And this is a May who has decided, whatever, you know what I mean? I don't actually care much about this family. And that feels like a lived-in character who has been here. And again, it's probably just down to Laura's performance, and I liked it.
Mm-hmm. I was just thinking, like, was it even a secret that May was still addicted? I missed something.
Not really.
No, she just gets dragged in. I don't know if it's to make Pride look better or to make it look like Pride's not alone. But yeah, I agree. Who didn't know that May was still had a thing for the game? Is she apologizing because she's been secretly going off to play it? The girl's walking around with a blue headband, you know what I mean? Quoting things from the game. Who doesn't know that she's... I mean, is she apologizing for threatening to kill Mouse? I don't know.
It's like they're really struggling to put her into scenes. I don't get it. It's like, you bring her back and you're struggling to make use of her. I don't really understand.
Yeah, but... disappointing.
Yeah, I kind of feel like it's just to make Pride look less abominable in his behavior, because it doesn't equate her addiction to his. Because again, May was literally a captive for weeks, you know, since the invasion. So it's like, should she have to apologize for this addiction she has, considering she was hooked up to these things for who knows how long? I mean, I don't know, but it does make Pride look like he's not the only a-hole up there, so...
Yeah.
Sometimes it just feels to me that Pride traded one thing for another. Like, he has so much similar behavior at this moment in time with his addiction that he also showed when Amber was taken by Ned. At least there he was justified in his reasoning, but he behaved so similar to this.
No, they're always looking for justification for Pride to be a tool. And it's like, no, he just is one. You know what I mean? Like, anything that's not going 100% right in Pride's life is an excuse for him to lash out at others. And that's just what he does. Mm-hmm. That's just who he is. You know, the calm, nice guy, that was a facade. That was a front. Mm. That's not who he actually is. He's a liar. He's a hypocrite. He lashes out, as Tamsin said, at the first sign of any opposition. anybody who doesn't agree with him, you know. And again, in season 3, there was a little more nuance to it, but there's been zero nuance in season 4. This is just who he is. The game has nothing to do with it.
Do we think maybe this is why there was such a lack of definition in the relationship between Amber and Pride? Because at one point, they were probably on, and then Pride started acting like this, and Amber was like, I need to row this all the way back.
You know? Well, according to the show, it didn't exist. It did kind of exist. It was all in Pride's head. It was all in Bray's head. Amber and Pride's relationship is this nebulous thing that changes whatever to whatever the narrative needs it to be at any given time.
Mm-hmm. Pride was just addicted to Amber.
I'm totally reading in now that he was given all these stage 5 clinger off the charts energy, and she was like, no, I can't. We'll be friends.
At some point, I figured she just gave him the ring as a shut up ring. You know, like, yeah, mm-hmm. Be my bodyguard. Does that make you happy? Yep, we're friends till the end. Here's my ring.
Mm, definitely.
Yeah, like I'm never going to fall in love again with anyone, so.
Here, you can have it. I only have bad memories attributed to this ring anyway.
And if it stops you shouting in my face for 5 minutes, have the ring, Pride. Just have the ring.
Yep, that must have been it.
Amber had lots of lapses in judgment. She's human.
We've all been there.
We've all been there.
And to be fair, to give him the ring to get him to shut up, I get that. That can actually be forgiven.
Dee is frustrated when Celine won't send anybody to look for Patch.
Right, forget it. I'm not treating her.
Dee, you can't do that. We treat everybody here.
Yeah?
We do everything for these idiots, but nothing for one of our own. Dee, can you just get over it? No! If Patch has to wait, then she does too.
Refusing to treat a red player who slipped back into the gang wars despite a previous stay at the hospital. Later, when Celine asks her if she has a thing for Patch, Dee denies it, saying he's not her type.
Well, I love how Celine avoids keeping talking about, she changes the subject on Patch by asking Dee if the reason why she's looking for Patch is, and so worried about him, is because she fancies him. Because she knows then that Dee will run off in a huff. She won't want to talk about, she doesn't have to listen to this anymore. Because as far as Celine is concerned, she doesn't care about Patch. He's probably dead in a ditch somewhere. We'll not think about him. He'll go into that box of like Charlie and Patsy. You know, he's gone now. Chloe. Don't think about him anymore, Dee.
He's in a Chloe box.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, that Chloe box. That is wild.
I hate that Celine, of all people, is put into the generic stand-in of opposition to search for someone without giving a decent reason why. It happens over and over again. Somebody goes missing. You have to have at least one person who's like, we shouldn't look for them and why. And it's like, it's a staple. You have to have that person there because the plot dictates nobody goes searching for this person. Patch can't be found by the mall rats. Okay, fine. But even back in season 1, when Chloe went missing, obviously half the tribe wanted to go search for this little girl they had taken responsibility for. Half the tribe didn't. And they had a decent conversation as to why, you know, same with Paul, you know, Lex was in opposition of searching for these kids. He has his personal reasons. He doesn't give a crap about the kids, but he still gave decent reasons as to why it didn't make sense to go searching for the children. Yeah, he's an a-hole, but he's an a-hole with a valid point of view because he's a human being, you know, and continues in season 2. They broke down why the Mallrats weren't putting as much energy into finding Brady. It still made them a-holes, but they were still humans who had reasons why they weren't interested or why it wasn't a priority or why they couldn't take the time, on and on. Amber and Trudy being missing, same thing. Here, it's just what they've given Celine as her generic person who's opposed to looking for Patch doesn't make Celine feel like a person who's been through this countless times. And if anyone should care, it's her. And there's so much dialogue you could give as to how Celine comes to the decision that looking for Patch right now isn't the priority. And she does not come across as relatable and or as someone someone who has learned from watching this stuff happen in the past. She doesn't even try to connect with Dee on any level of like, I totally know how you feel. Guess how many times I've been through this? You know what I mean? But, you know, and then break down why she can't, like, she can't help right now. You know, she doesn't even say you can go look for him. She doesn't even express the fact that Patch is a valuable player to their team mm-hmm. for their stupid hospital and is right. necessary to find, but we can't, I can't help you find him right now or whatever. I don't even, she doesn't even have resources to search for Patch.
Yeah.
Nope. It's just a generic, we don't have time for this right now. So they did Celine a disservice by not treating her like an actual person who's lived in this world, lived through this experience, and could still have a valid reason for not searching for Patch. I'm Team D. She's pretty much the only character I care about this whole episode, and Mouse and her sassiness. So, yeah. You know, I was very Team D, and it was, I would not have helped that girl either. I would have been pissed. It's not like D took a Hippocratic oath. She ain't got to save nobody. She's a volunteer. So mm-hmm. I would totally be like, I ain't taking care of her. Nuh-uh. No, you're not taking advantage of my kindness when you're just going to go back out there and hurt yourself. I don't care. Bleed out.
And it's not just a kindness thing, is it? It's a resource thing. I mean, they don't have the resources to keep using on people who are going to continually get into these fights all the time because of a silly game. I mean, that's the reality.
Especially when the closest thing they have to a doctor is missing.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And Celine having the audacity to be upset at Dee. Dee mm-hmm. gives a valid reason why she won't help this person.
Right.
And Celine's like, we have to help everyone. Right after telling Dee we're not going to search for our own paramedic.
Yeah.
Yep.
How are you going to help someone if you don't have him?
And she's, I mean, what have they done to Celine? Like, it's just...
City leader Celine.
Oh, God. If she only had a brain.
She is so nonsensical as the leader, you know? And it's like, she didn't have to be this way. She could still be making the same decisions, but if you gave her some depth and reason for it, and the struggle she's going through coming to these conclusions, coming to these decisions, mm-hmm. we would care about the person Celine has been shaped into. We might even be sad for the person Celine has been shaped into. But instead, we're just like, oh my gosh, you know what I mean? Like, she just says the most generic crap because somebody has to say it.
I'd also add to that, it would be interesting as well if we pivoted into the fact that she can't cope, that she's been placed in this position because there simply isn't anyone else who can do it. And she actually herself cannot do it.
Oh, yeah. I'm just like, oh, yeah. My gosh. Dee's half the conversation's great. What they've given Celine to do is just an insult to Celine, just to anybody, really, to be honest. And it is what it is. But...
I mean, I think the worst thing is, though, is this is the sort of dialogue that they're going to give Amber in season 5
mm-hmm.
as well. This is just generic, strong female leader, nonsensical rubbish, really.
And yeah, I agree that the whole bringing up whether Dee is into Patch, which would fuel her reasons for wanting to find him, just felt... like a really crappy way to even introduce the idea of Dee and Patch being in a relationship, and very trite of Celine because you're basically saying that Celine is assuming that the only reason that Dee would care this much about finding him is because she has a personal interest in him, not because he's freaking necessary, you know? And I just didn't like it. I didn't like it at all.
It's something I would have expected Lex to ask, not Celine.
Yeah.
Like, Lex making an assumption like that, sure, totally in character. But Celine, I guess he would only want to search for someone if she was into them? Maybe she's projecting.
Maybe.
I still just think it was a way for her to shut the conversation down.
Nope, I've just seen this conversation done so much better numerous times in the past that I... could not dredge up an empathy bone for it or a care. And I'm just Team D. Throw that girl out on the street.
She responds, as you have said, as you both said, like a normal person. Because this isn't a normal situation. And when people go missing at the moment, they tend never to be seen again.
I mean, D was friends with Chloe, and Chloe vanished as well.
Yeah. I mean, when you don't see someone for a couple of days in season four, they are gone.
Heck, that's just the nature of their world. Someone goes out, they're gone forever.
It's like Celine has closed out on that.
And that could have been explored.
Not here.
Like, there's a part of her that's shut down because of this happened. This is just their life now. You know, even her own daughter is gone. Both of her daughters. And she could not have cared less about either of them going away. You know? And it could have been explored. That's why I said it could be a tragedy of how hard and desensitized Celine has become living in this world, and that her idea of being a leader is someone who is not moved by these emotions. But no, there is no explanation, so who friggin' cares?
I mean, look at the way she looks after Mouse and Charlie was gone, and no response.
Another time this was done better is, take season one, Amber. She had the same attitude of wanting to help everyone, be a community, everyone counts. But when she'd have her breakdowns where she just didn't care, they were explored. We knew why Amber had reached the wall in her empathy, where she was just like, I don't care. Okay, Patsy, it's your birthday. I don't give a crap. Yes, we're all going to die. Deal with it. It's not a nice thing for her to do, but we got to see the journey that got Amber, of all people, to get to a place where she would tell a grieving 9-year-old to screw you on her birthday. And you're like, ooh, that you're the a-hole in this situation, but I know how you got here.
So, Ved enters Reddy space and tracks down Ram.
So let me get this straight. We're all going to live in here forever, in the program, and the other technos are going to look after us. And our bodies, our real bodies, are going to be looked after by machines.
Discovering that his overall plan is to live in reality space while addicted game players work to provide electricity to power the machines that will look after his and his friends' bodies forever. Supposedly, not a single techno knew of this goal. So yeah, what do you make of Ram's plan and Ved's attempts to get through to him?
So, I want to say that one of the positives of this episode was how it was filmed.
Costa was there, so makes sense.
I was going to say, yeah, Costa was there.
I think he did a great... I think the sequence where Ved is in reality space and there's that sort of paneled wall in front of him, and then he sees the picture, he opens the picture, and what I really liked about it was that the lighting went from his side, when he's by the wall, it went from indoor lighting. And then when he steps through, it goes to outdoor lighting. And obviously, the wall was just in front of the house. So they are outdoors when this is being, like, when he stepped through, that was probably, he actually stepped through a door in a wall that they took through. Prior to that, he was in a room. But I like that. I thought that worked really well. And I just felt like it was such a shame that we had so many other generic things going on around it, like the Java stuff and things like that. But I also liked, I felt like you could kind of see Ram's vision for reality space in this and how they were essentially just going to occupy his childhood home. And he's just mad. This reminded you how mad he actually is. Because, like, we've seen different shades of Ram, but really, he's just nuts. And this episode really just totally went there and said, yeah, he's just nuts. My favorite thing about this whole episode, though, is we will later find out that all he actually needed to have was a British guy shout at him to walk, and that was it. That's all he ever needed.
This is another thing that could have worked if the characterization and the storytelling had been better. You know, there aren't many hints to Ram, his goals, his inner thoughts, the resentment he has about not being able to walk, that it even makes him feel cut off from people, that he even thinks of people as his friends in a sincere way. The only thing I feel like this is got a good through line for this reveal is that he's possessive of the people he considers his, because they aren't aware that this is his plan for them, but he's made this the plan for the people he considers his. You know, my friends are going to stay here with me. That's the only through line I feel is consistent with this reveal about who Ram is as a person. All the other stuff feels like it came out of nowhere. I mean, you can infer that, yeah, it makes sense that he'd want to escape to a world before all this happened, before he hurt himself, before he got stuck in the chair, da-da-da-da-da. But it's not the story they told, you know? And so it, again, falls flat. And I agree with Tamsin. The one shot that I think is good is, you know, the wall, the paneled wall, and Ved walking through it, kind of like the labyrinth style, finding the picture, thinking to open the picture, you know, and then walking through it. That's a nice visual. And again, it's surrounded by a bunch of generic crap, though. So you can't really polish it. You can't, you know, it just stands out. And, but yeah, everything around it is just, ugh, you know, and the ADR of Java just repeatedly talking to him. 1 minute she's saying, you've lost him. Yeah. Keep going. You know, like, girl, the ADR is just bad, really bad. They didn't know what to do with Java, clearly. And
that's wild. That is wild. That Java thing, because you hit the nail when you said how possessive he is over the people that he's close to. And Java has just found out that her megalomaniac husband has decided to put them all into a vegetative state, and they will live in this version, his version of paradise. Because you can bet that we're never going to play in Java's version of paradise. It's going to be Ram's game night every single night. And also, this is a man that she knows, if he is annoyed enough with you, he will just turn the ventilator off.
This is why this is all nonsense.
Not forever.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and it's like, she's finding out this in real time, and we're getting nothing.
I hate this whole thing. I'm just going to be honest. I hate this whole thing. I don't think it makes much sense. Like, what? So if this is the supposed plan that Ram has all along, what are the technos doing here? What do they think they were coming here to do? Nothing makes sense. How not a single other person knew of this plan. And what does Ram think is going to happen once he's locked into reality space, and what, a couple of his technos are going to be keeping the machines going while the slaves keep the energy going? Like, so well, he's not even going to be able to control things. Like, it doesn't make any sense. It's stupid. I don't like it.
Well, that, I think, makes the most sense out of all of this, because he is a megalomaniac. No, he's a megalomaniac. He thinks the world revolves around him. He thinks that the technos will continue to work just because it's for Ram. And so it doesn't actually make sense, because it's been dreamed up in the mind of somebody who is just off the chain. Of course none of this will actually work, and why would they continue to do it? And the minute they all go into reality space, they're just going to turn the machine off, because, like, why wouldn't you? But in Ram's head, in Ram's world, everybody is a toy for him to play with and exists for his pleasure. So, of course, they're just going
to... But he's smarter than that.
It
doesn't make sense. If you make him out to be this smart, this doesn't make sense. So he's going to lock himself in reality space. He's going to, supposedly, these other technos are going to keep his version going. They're not going to tamper with it or control. Like, he has no control once he's inside. It doesn't make sense.
There is a difference between emotional intelligence and actual intelligence.
No, we're talking about practical intelligence.
Sometimes there's no connector between the two. You can be a very intelligent person, but not get any of the cues or understand where anyone else is coming from at all.
No, I'm talking about practical intelligence. How this practically, this does not work. Practical wise, forgetting the emotional attachments.
I think you're both right, and that's the problem with the storytelling. I agree with Tamsin that Ram would dream up something like this, because he's the main character in his world, and he's created an environment where he is the main character, and he truly believes his own legend that nothing could go without him. Nobody would step foot out of line. But Lance is right, too. they have shown that Ram is intelligent enough to recognize threats around him and that not everyone is that loyal to him and how easily people can step out of line. Why would Ram think he'd be safe in this situation if his closest are stuck in the situation with him? Like, if the people who are the most loyal to you are also vegetables trapped in reality space, who is going to make sure this keeps running? You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to put Ved in there, you're going to put Java in there. These are the two most loyal to you. Okay. These are the two who are literally fighting for your life while everybody else is kind of like, eh, you know what I mean? This is stupid. It's a stupid idea for him to have. And it doesn't make sense because he has been shown to be smarter than this. And he doesn't have a contingency plan as to how he's going to make sure that they're all protected and that the show keeps running. You know what I mean? Again, you could have used Mega for this, you know, to show like where Ram's backup plan was to make sure that the Techno stayed loyal and did this, you know? So I think you're both right. This idea makes sense for his ego, but it doesn't make sense for how smart he's been shown to be.
It would have even been a practical thing to have Jay for. Because, you know, Jay would do anything to try and keep his brother alive.
But I hate it too. I think it's stupid. I'm like,
oh really? Yeah, I hate it. Well,
like, this is so stupid. Like, are you? Yeah, and nobody really reacts to this the way they should have. I think Ved's the only one who was like, for reals? Like, what? You want to lock me up in here? I don't got time. I got to focus on getting you out. Oh my gosh, so dumb. Like, this is what this has all been leading up to? Are you serious? This is what's in the mystery box? Refund.
And it feels so half-baked because you know they've just come up with it now. I don't believe this was the plan from the start. I think that the writers are just scrabbling and it's episode 42 and they've just come up with it now.
It's just crazy to think 42 episodes, you did not know why the Technos were coming to the city to invade.
Yeah. It's wild.
You had no plan.
It boggles the mind. Now, I'll say something. If this was series one, you could give them a bit of leeway. You could say, well, they've never written for a series this big before. You know, they're going to work it out in series, you know, season two is going to come along and it will be fine. This is series four. We've had three series of this now, and it's simply not getting, like, the writing is decreased in quality to such an extent that they're just like, this should be the main thing that everything is revolving around. Ram's plan for the city and everybody involved in it becoming essentially this giant cog that just keeps him in fantasy land forever. That should be massive. We should have been told about this much earlier as an audience.
But yeah, the few positives is that nice shot that Costa got, you know, of Ved having to make his way, you know, into Ram's subconscious. And I also like the added, every time he brings up something that Ram's subconscious doesn't want to deal with, he disappears and Ved has to keep tracking him down. It had a nice Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind feel to it. Obviously nowhere on par with the skill of that storytelling, but an interesting visual that I enjoyed. And it is also interesting to find that for Ram, of all the things we've learned about this guy, that his idea of peace is his childhood home.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I mean, it speculates a lot about him. Was he a lonely child who didn't have friends, you know, but home was a safe space for him. And he wants to force his friends to have to stay there with him, the place he feels the safest. He's adamantly avoiding dealing with the stuff he doesn't want to, you know? And so that's kind of interesting, kind of cool. Again, it doesn't mean anything in this dog crap that it's surrounded by, but on its own, an interesting concept, but that's not going to save anything.
Something that also doesn't mean anything is they've accidentally confirmed a theory we all had way back in season one, which is that Ram might have been involved in the military, because if you remember, there's that photo of his parents and his dad's wearing a military uniform. So there's that.
Go set design. You did your part. You couldn't save it, but you tried.
But, like, you know, the theory's correct. I'm just going to say, we were right, guys. We were right.
Don't give us too much credit. It's not like it was a reach to assume they came from a military background.
Oh, look, small wins, okay? Small wins.
You're right.
What we said last week, we build up the story better than what they presented, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love to see our version of this.
One of our darts was bound to hit something.
But I would love to see our version of this. It would slap, let's be honest. I'm also going to say dumb decisions, letting Dan go when he's such a good actor. Yet again, he's proven what a great actor and amazing asset he is to this cast.
Yeah, he's doing a great job in his scenes where he's learning this stuff in real time and having to react to it. But he doesn't have time to get upset about it. He has to just focus on his goal, and that's getting Ram out. And I think Dan did a great job portraying all of that. His mind is clearly blown. He's even slightly impressed at the fact that, oh, I get it. Nice. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I get what you were going for. Anyway, let's focus. I have to get you out of here because I'm still trying to get my girlfriend so I can get as far away from you as possible. And he plays that scrambling, thinking quickly on your feet very well.
Yeah. Just such a mistake to let him go. So, such the wrong thing to do.
Yep, it's another scenario. Him and his brother. Who should have died on the mountain? Not Ved.
Denied access to the game, Mouse takes out her frustration on Celine, who later thinks Mouse has stolen her family jewelry. Though in actual fact, Pride has taken it to trade with May for game credits. How do you react to this storyline and Mouse's connection with Siva in this episode?
I just want to say, Celine's got Russian ancestry and they're telling us this now? Wow. I had no idea.
I will forgive the sudden appearance of this article of jewelry that Celine has been carrying around this entire time and hasn't lost through any of her journeys or imprisonments or takeovers and has never spoken of before. I'll forgive it. Remember, Tysanne suddenly had a ring that was super important to her when she's the kind of person who should have just picked up a rock from the beach and made that her wedding gift. You know what I mean? I'll forgive the earrings, okay?
You know whatever. Whose earrings those were? Zandra's earrings, season one.
I'd love it if she was just lying about the earrings. That'd be fantastic.
Remember her going with the earrings that Zandra was going to wear on her wedding day.
And no, what I'm saying is I would...
The necklace.
I thought that... It was
earrings. Oh.
But whatever. I'll forgive the jewelry. At first, I was mad at her for assuming that Mouse was the one who took them. At first, I was like, oh, really? You assume the little girl who's pouting at you right now is the one who stole your earrings, not your deceitful boyfriend who's been lying to you and has proven to you how untrustworthy he actually is. But I will let it slide because of how Selena's been written. You know, she refuses to look at Pride for who he is. She's got complete blinders on with this guy. She has let everything he's done slide. She rarely really reacts the way she should to his behavior, you know? So why? She's in denial about him, complete denial about him, clinging to him in the same way she's clung to other people. It just looks slightly different, but it isn't any different to how she's clung to other people and the lies she'll tell herself to keep clinging to them. And, at first I was mad, but I was like, nah, it makes sense for Celine to, she'll go to the little girl who's mad. And I really felt bad for Mouse, being accused of something he didn't do. Granted, I thought they were pretty gentle with her, you know, understanding she is a little girl and if she did this, da 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 da. But it's just, I still felt really bad for Mouse and I loved her sassiness and her irritation and I liked her and Siva. I liked the way Siva swept in. And I almost got the sense I wish it could have been explored. I really do. Here is Siva being a better mother figure to this little girl and listening to her and reaching her on an emotional level where Celine doesn't have the time or interest, despite being the one who brought her in. I would have loved to explore a sense of insecurity from Celine, because she gives Siva a look when they're talking about it, talking, you know, about Mouse and the way Mouse is responding to Siva and not Celine. But again, Celine doesn't seem to care about any of the children she's adopted, so why would she care now? But I feel like something could have been done with that. And yeah, I thought I had more to say, but aside from the scene with Pride and May, I love the disgust you can see that May has for him. Mm. And like, ugh. And you can even sense, because she still has feelings for him and will be revealed, apparently, in season 5, that she's still into him. It's going to be revealed that May still has strong feelings for Pride. And in this kind of hints at the disgust she feels for a man she still has feelings for, who didn't look for her, didn't seem to care that she's alive, just moved on with her friend. And it's just he's just a liar across the board. You can see that all over Laura's face. Like, Laura is just acting the crap out of his character that they're not doing anything with. Laura's bringing so much to the table. Pride, you're so gross. You're gross. And it makes me laugh. Like, not once did it ever occur to Pride to just go work for his credits. Like, you're a scab. You are so gross. Like, you don't want anyone to know what you're doing. So you are doing every underhanded thing you can to get credits rather than just do some honest work to get them. Because God forbid someone see you working for the credits and know that you want to play the game. You'll lie. You'll cheat. Like, that's what you're willing to do. Like, everything about him, he's a garbage human being.
And the pullback reveal that he is the one who did it, it's not surprising. Was anyone surprised by that?
No. I knew it was him immediately. As soon as these magical earrings popped up into the story, I was like, oh, Pride took them.
Heavy-handed setup, so yeah. It was quite obvious. Like, in previous episodes, like, the previous seasons, this would have lasted a couple of episodes. It would have been, like, slowly built up. I mean, the drama and attention would have, there would be multiple people it could have been. But here, it's like, introduced. Like, Celine might as well just been talking to the camera. Like, these are my special earrings. They're going to go missing. Here you go. And then Pride, you know what I mean? It's just, yeah.
As soon as we've addressed it as an addiction, he can't help. Let's bring in a valuable piece of jewelry that can be pawned away. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you've done this storyline before, and you've still done it better back in season one. It's
crazy.
It was Celine who did it that time, you know? And it was still built up way better, you know? Like,
how are you doing repeated storylines worse? Like,
yes.
Oh my god, now you've opened that can of worms that it was Celine that did it to Sandra. Celine should have known it was Pride.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh god, jeez. What are they drinking in that mole? Do I get
plenty, clearly. I mean, even our alcoholic Lex still drinks champagne, so they're drinking plenty.
I would have loved that. I would have loved for her to realize her earrings are missing. And, you know, Victoria, to show it on her face, the myriad of thoughts that are going through her head as to who could have taken them, and to show some doubt when she lands on Mouse. Like, Victoria could have acted that, you know what I mean? But, you know, I'm not going to blame Victoria, because she's clearly stretched thin at this time during the performance, because she's doing this show and Atlantis High. And clearly this one is not getting her full attention. And I don't blame her, because why would she? It's not rewarding, you know? But there's so much more she could have brought to the performance, or that could have been written for her performance. Victoria's like, look, I'm here. I do what's on the page, and that's all you're getting from me. And I'm like, kudos, get your check, girl. But when you compare it to other performances that are going above and beyond, you know, Victoria could be acting these scenes as someone who's lived in this world and has her history, but she's not, and it's not being written for her. So why should she, right?
I also just want to bring something up while we're on the subject of Siva, just circling back to Siva a second. I thought that it was really interesting that Lex understood the washing instructions for his clothes, probably because Andra had shouted in his face multiple times, you have to hand wash this, it cannot be tumble dried, you must wash this on cold. It was a reminder that he had actually been married to Andra.
This makes me mad.
Yeah, but there wasn't a washer or dryer working back then.
Nope.
But Zandra still would have known how to wash her clothes and would have made it clear to people how they had to be taken care of.
Not to wash it warm.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. But again, that's something they could have done with the Lex and Siva scene. I felt so empty. Like, they don't even bother to explore why Lex is frustrated with her homesteading act. You know, like, they could really explore why it makes him uneasy, why it makes him uncomfortable, why he hates her playing wifey to him, you know, but no, they don't. He just gets mad at her for being nice to him. And you're like, why, Lex? What's your problem? When there are a myriad of reasons as to why he would feel that way about her behavior. Maybe this isn't the girl he fell in love with. Maybe it reminds him too much of being married, having a partner that you do these things with, and he doesn't want her to be that person. You know, like, there's so much you could do there. Mm-hmm. And you could explore why Siva's doing it. Maybe he sees this as fake from her because it is fake from her. This isn't her. She's desperately clinging to him and trying to be this so he won't give her away, so his family won't kick her out. There's so much you could do with this scene. And instead, it's a waste of our time and just an excuse so that Siva will go and do the thing and train people. And it's like, there could be a deeper reason as to why. Maybe that is something Siva actually enjoyed about being with the Technos. If something she was good at, and she's dumbing herself down so she'll be accepted. And now that she's had this fight with Lex and seeing that dumbing herself down isn't appreciated, she's like, fine, I'm not going to live for you. I'm going to do something for me. There's so much they could have done. But instead, this is what we got. And it tells us nothing about these two people as characters.
Yeah, it's so frustrating. And also, they refuse to give that relationship any depth at all. I mean, as you say, Lex giving us a bit of surprising depth and saying, Siva, I don't really think you enjoy this. I think you're doing it because you think I want you to do this, and I just want you to be happy here.
Yeah, anything, you know?
Yeah.
Anything would have been better than what this cardboard box of a scene is supposed to be.
And still, what is she washing? Like, I know she was washing his clothes, but she's been carrying, like, we say this every episode when we see her. She's always replete with that basket. And it's like, but what's inside the basket, Siva?
Yeah.
I also love how they pretend that he's ever going to wear something he wore in season 3 again. Like, he's taken that off now. You'll never see him wear that again.
No, he chose those clothes for Tyson.
Yeah, even that could have been interesting if he saw that she shrunk or destroyed something that reminds him of his wife, you know, and it just brings to the... But no, these two aren't allowed to have any depth in their relationship. Mm-hmm. Until the plot calls for it, then Lex will care about Tyson again and blah, 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 and it's just be there for conflict, but not for character work.
I'm thinking, you know, he's so against her doing anything domestic, yet here we saw Siva being the actual one decent mother in the mall at the moment. She's acting more like a mom to Mouse right now than Celine did over the past weeks.
Mm.
And sure, not everything she does for Mouse is too practical, but at least she's teaching her proper hygiene and trying to cheer her up and distract her.
She's trying. She's trying with her.
I mean, they don't give that any kind of characterization or motive until season 5 with Lottie. Yeah. Explaining that Siva's draw to this young wayward child is because her little sister was a young wayward child, you know, and they could have set it up here with Mouse that she does have that in her because she's a middle sibling. She has a little sister. Yeah. She had to play peacemaker her entire life, you know, and it's just in her instinctually to make the little one feel a little better about stuff because you're the baby and I get it, you know, and whatever. But no, they waste that opportunity here and then bring it out of nowhere when Lottie comes into the picture. And then suddenly, that's why Siva does these things for this little kid. Waste. Just a waste. All of it.
That brings us to our final thoughts of the episode. So Ebony discovers the captive Patch and relays the information to the Morats, believing that this is their chance for Jay to stage a coup and take control of the Technos. But Jay insists on going alone, despite her protestations in front of the Morats. At the hotel, Jay gathers support among the Technos before confronting Ram's guards and Drava, only for Ram himself to return and order Jay's arrest. So yeah, what did you make of the overall plan back in the Mall and the end of the episode?
Is it just me, or does every plan that Jay have is the worst, and yet these people never stop listening to him when he gives his idea of a plan? Even his reasons for a plan are stupid, you know what I mean? And yet they always follow Jay's plan, and he's always wrong.
Well, I think, Liz, it's pretty privilege.
Yep.
Jeez. There is at least some sort of tension building up here. You know, they even introduce sort of a time crunch. Ebony discovering that, you know, we've got the time crunch of Java and Ved have got to get Ram on his feet because they are facing a mutiny. We see the breakdown of the Technos, who are like, they don't know what's going on. Now Ved's missing. They've got all this stuff to handle and nobody to tell them how to handle it, which again, why did Ram think his plan would work? Because these guys disintegrate faster than toilet paper underwater. So there's some tension there. And then you got Ebony finding out about Patch and knowing that something's being hidden. She's suspected of this whole time. So she goes to the, you know, she gets Patch to tell her what he knows. She goes to the Mallrats, presumably tells them what Patch told her. We don't get that. So we don't know what Patch told her. We don't know what she tells the Mallrats. But let's assume that she tells the Mallrats everything. And now they've got very limited time to make a move before Ved and Java succeed. So there's a nice amount of tension that the Mallrats might actually be able to take out the Technos before Ram wakes up. So if you were invested, I will applaud that tension because this season is allergic to it. So I was like, okay, kudos. I'm not invested, so I don't give a crap. But for those who were, this actually worked.
I think for me, the only thing that worked is that there were still some Technos that knew Jay and kind of sided with him. So when he goes to face Java, he actually doesn't go alone. He's got at least 5 or 6 Technos with him. And that kind of reminded you that he once did hold a position in the Technos. But then it also undercuts again Ram's crackpot idea that he's going to live in cyberspace and the Technos aren't going to have multiple coups throughout the decades in which him and everybody else are just going to be chilling, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, originally Ram probably thought Jay would be in there with him.
Oh my God, really? Okay.
That must have been why he had Jay, to look after him, to look at him forever.
Oh, okay. That's a lie.
We did get an answer, okay, a few episodes ago when Java let Jay go. Lance posed the question, why do you think she let him go? Is this a plan that she and Ram had to set him up? Does it make sense that Java let Jay go? And now we have our answer. No, it didn't. There was no plan. Java let him go because the script said so. And yeah, so we at least have that, because I've been wondering when that was going to come back. And now we know that it made zero sense that Java let him go, because he's still to be arrested on site, you know? And it's like, so why did she let him go? There was no plan.
Mm-hmm. I loved how Patch just wandered into the scene when really he should have been just hightailing it out of there. But he wanders in to be like, no, they've been keeping me a prisoner. And Ram is definitely really ill because I'm here. It's like, I would have just run away.
Oh, my gosh.
I wonder what Ebony said to him. Like, hang tight. We're going to save you. We're going to overthrow the Technos.
I'm going to call you in as a last-minute witness.
Nice to be in. That has reminded me. Didn't Ebony look great as a Techno?
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Oh, she did. That was a highlight. Yep.
Did Didn't even notice.
She looked incredible.
She did. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. With a mask on? Like, with what the mask, hell? Yep.
No wonder her sisters hate her.
Yeah.
Like, no wonder they hate her so much. Because even in the same outfit, she still does it better.
Yeah.
But I barely noticed. I was like, whatever. But yes, Jay has been, his arrest has been ordered yet again. It's like, if Java hadn't let him go, they would have already had him somewhere tied up or whatever. But yeah, it's funny. And it's funny because Ram never even asked her, where did Jay go? I thought I ordered him to be arrested. It's just so, this is so stupid. I'm telling you, all of this reminds me of the end of 2012. Now, you guys, I love disaster movies. I love them. And I don't have a high criteria of what makes a good disaster movie. There's just like three things it needs to have. I want characters I care about, great disaster porn, but the most important thing a disaster movie has to have is this last 20 minutes. You have had to do a good job of making me like these characters so that I care if they make it through the last 20 minutes. Because that's when it comes down to the wire. That's when you have to care. Are these people going to survive? Okay, are they going to win? And end of 2012, I don't care if anybody makes it. I'm just like, the whole world can be destroyed. The only likable characters had already died. So I was like, whatever, kill the whole family down there, kill the whole ship, don't care. And that's how I feel here. Like, you guys, this is where I'm supposed to give a crap. And I just don't, I don't care what happens to this world anymore. I hope Mouse gets out of there, but that's been it. I don't care. Like, you failed.
Yeah, maybe the image.
Like, bye. You know what I mean? Mouse is the only one I really care about because she's an innocent child in the middle of these idiots, you know, telling her what she should do. Like, Dee and Patch are old enough to know better. So they want to ride this disaster train. They deserve whatever happens to them. Mouse doesn't. I want her to escape. Everybody else, go down with the ship. You asked for it. You have the day you voted for, okay?
I mean, just thinking about this episode, though, I know I always say it boggles the mind, but it does boggle the mind. We're 42 mm-hmm. episodes in. The plot should be winding, like, we should be reaching crescendo now. This is really important stuff we should be getting. And that they use filler, that we get essentially a 5-minute clip show. Like, and we also get story beats that we didn't really need, like all of that stuff with Rad trapped in reality space. Why do we need this? It didn't really tell us anything more about him. Yes, it told us about his plan, but as we've all said, it's bananas. It's a stupid plan. We all agree with that. From the mind of a lunatic, we all agree with that. But this is episode 40. I can't emphasize enough. There are now 9 episodes until the end, and it feels like we're trapped in treacle. We're going nowhere. We're just going round and round in circles. We're listening to the same conversations and the same arguments and the same inertia. Like, nothing is moving forward.
Yeah, it's too episodic. Every conflict, they set up one and it's immediately resolved. There are no real long-lasting consequences to anything that happens from the very start of the season. There are no long-lasting like, when you get to the end of the season, you can't look back at the beginning and be like, ah, see how they set that up? See how the dominoes fell to get us here? No, it's just one silly thing that happens after another, resolved, set up, resolved, set up, resolved. You know, there is no long-flowing story with meaningful change to any of the people involved and anything they did having any real repercussions that matter. So it's like, okay, another crisis averted for the technos, I guess, you know, and our protagonists once again are right back at the same place they were. They've made zero progress in their tale. You know, it's like, okay, fine. The Ram's alive and Jay's arrested again. Like, who cares? Who really cares?
Yeah, because we know it's not going to go anywhere. Like, he will just escape, or he'll be let go of by Java again or whatever, and like at the end of the day, like you say, who cares? And Ram just pops up at the end of the episode like your manager that you didn't think was going to be in the office and then they are in the office.
Because
so you're gonna have to work till 5.
You that's know? How medicine, because that's how fast medicine works when that's you're coming out of a coma.
In all honesty, I want to know what they gave him, because I want that stuff if I ever need it.
Did they give him anything anyway? Because like, yeah, he doesn't clearly really need anything.
Well, yeah, of course. At the end of the day, none of this matters because Ram wasn't sick. It was all in his head. He just needed a sexy zaddy to tell him, hey, you can do it. You know what I mean? That's all he needed. But in this story, yeah, it's still stupid. It's still so dumb.
They just played a tape of Hugh Grant going, come on, pull yourself together, man. And it just snapped him out of it.
I mean, who can resist Hugh Grant? I'm with you. I understand. I did like the scene where Ebony and Jay get into their argument and the mole rats are just watching like it's Days of Our Lives.
Yeah.
That was just comical. I don't think it's supposed to be, but it's very funny. These two are going at it and nobody has anything to say. They're just sitting there like, what the f-? And then Jay storms out and she has the nerve to look at them like, what are you staring at? Like sand through the hourglass. That's what I'm looking at. Like, you guys. I don't want to follow either of you two because you're too tumultuous to trust. I guess the two of them will just do whatever. Mars have no impact on this story, so who cares?
All we needed, though, in that scene was the line of dialogue where someone turns to someone else and says, they're sleeping together? Did you know this? And then the other person shrugs. It's like, nobody tells me anything.
Alright, cool. That brings series 4, episode 42 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of the podcast yourself. Just search for The Tribe UK or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation, just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk, and we'll see you next time for episode 43. Until then, bye.
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 Bye.